Welcome to another iteration of Behind the Beard, guys, and we're unsupervised this week.
Yeah, no rules this week. Pat's not here.
The rule follower himself, Pat Pohl, did not make it. We want to welcome Derek Green stepping in for Pat. Welcome, Derek.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
And we're joined today, as promised, with Coach Chad Walker from Christ School. Coach, thank you for being on.
I appreciate you guys having me on again.
Which, if you guys don't remember, Coach Walker, our first interview last year, and what has been a very successful coach's interview process this year. So thanks for being the first.
Yeah, no. Again, sorry I'm late this year.
You went from being first last year to last this year. So
I will say, once we had Coach Walker on, it seemed like there was a lot more openness to have interviews. So I would like to thank Coach Walker for breaking the ice.
Everybody was ready after Coach Walker.
Yeah, he was the guinea pig that had to go first. And the next thing you know, everybody's all of a sudden ready to have an interview.
So we just got done watching your scrimmage, inter-squad scrimmage. What'd you think?
You know, a lot of good things today. I mean, obviously, a key player being injured here, always tough. You know, more so the mental aspect of the team, and the young man was voted a captain earlier today, and to be injured his senior year is tough. But overall, I thought the scrimmage was well. I mean, we split our teams pretty evenly in a green and white. So it wasn't really the, first-team offense versus first-team defense. A lot of guys split there, a lot of younger guys getting action, and really for us to be able to see with our numbers this year, the largest our program's ever been. We'll have 72 players this year in our program, which is awesome. So seeing what some of these younger guys can do and some of these new guys that we haven't really been able to see too much out of, I thought overall it was pretty good.
So 72, what do you think led to bigger numbers this year?
You know, I think one thing that as our program grows and things grow, I think a lot of guys looking at it really, honestly, the reclassification year, we got a lot of new guys in that look for that opportunity to reclassify for that extra year. A lot of them, whether it's academic growth that they need, some of them physical growth, some guys just looking for an opportunity. And I think the success of some of our guys in the past, right? You know, you have a guy like Caden Jones who went off to Alabama, did really well in the Under Armour All-American game, and then, obviously the next week, admissions is starting to get phone calls and different things. And so it leads to, growth and development, and we've been fortunate enough over the past several years now, we've sent, about 30, has it been about 37 guys in 4 years to play college football. So, pretty excellent numbers.
Very nice. So, standouts today, anybody really stood out to you? You were super impressed. Maybe you weren't expecting, or maybe you did expect it. What'd you see out there?
Yeah, I think, I guess the elephant in the room, Mason Holtzclaw, who was a freshman quarterback last year, now being a sophomore, a lot more freedom in the offense, right? Two play calls in the huddle, being able to check us into the right plays. He did a good job today with, that audible system when we challenged him with it. And just the growth that he's got in the pocket now, his presence, going through his progressions, being able to read defensive coverages now. I think last year, because he's so mature, we took it for granted that he knew how to do all these things, and realistically he didn't, right? And he spent a ton of time in the off-season meeting and just really watching film and developing not only, as a quarterback, but also a leader, as a sophomore. Jackson Cantsell has been extremely impressive, not only as a running back, but also in the secondary as a safety. He's done some really nice things for us. Spencer Thompson, our kicker, he is getting better and
getting
better.
Booted for sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's only his second year
only
playing
second
football?
Year playing football, yeah. So he last year he was 30 for 31 on extra points, with one of them being blocked when we had some pressure in the A-gap, so really not even his fault. 7 for 7 on field goals last year. But he finally got some, some help in the kicking game in the offseason and really focused on it, and he's gone to camps, and he's been one of the best kickers in the camp circuit and things there. So he's really worked on it a ton there. Was really impressed today with Sky Liu. Sky lost 35 pounds. He played guard for us last year. He was playing Sam Backer today made some really nice plays. So that was really exciting to see a guy like that step up. Our offensive line, right, our starting offensive line, who we really weren't even in full tact today. We had two guys out, but, you know, Luke Anderson, who's a three-year starter now for us at center, his growth just as a in the game of football, right? You know, we've put a lot on those guys this year, making calls, learning how to point the, as we call it, the zero point to set our run schemes and pass schemes. And, you know, he handles all that stuff and makes the call and puts us in the right direction. Wilder Brasher, he went from about 6'2", 210 pounds last year. He's 6'4", 250 right now. Dawson Thompson and Sam Browder on the, you know, on the edges are big boys, both of them 6'5 plus. And Dawson went from about 225 to 260 right now. And Sam Browder is a good 285. And, you know, big dancing bear that just committed to Memphis the other week. And, you know, Cash Freeman and growth by Luke Manisclair, one of our other seniors. We've seen a lot of growth there. And then a couple other guys that have kind of trickled in have been able to fill out that depth. But we got, you know, seven or eight, you know, linemen that can play this year for us, and we feel really confident about them. Then on the defensive side of the ball, Jake Landis, a guy that, you know, has been kind of a role player on special teams for us in the past, has really shown this camp that he should be on the field, especially as a safety. He's done a lot of nice things there. And then, you know, you talk about new additions, Nico Andrews from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He was number 13 today, wide receiver, defensive back. He is smooth, man.
We agree.
He's got potential to be the best athlete to come through here, you know, at that position as a wide receiver and a defensive back. And then Cooper Kirby, he was wearing number 7 today. He's a linebacker, receiver, H-back out of Dallas, Texas. He's been very impressive from what we've seen. Finley Sullivan, who, you know, returning, you know, senior captain. Played a lot of defensive end last year and defensive tackle for us this offseason, worked him in at tight end, and he's doing exceptional at that position. We talked about before Cooper Perrone, who unfortunately suffered an injury today. I mean, he was having a phenomenal camp. I mean, just leader of this team and doing some really special things, and we hope to get him back, right? Unfortunately, injuries are a part of football, and hopefully he'll come back healthy and right now just kind of worried about him mentally in that aspect. But we've got a lot of new faces around and guys really gelling together, especially kind of in, you know, 10 days, right? And we get ready for our first game next week. But there's been a lot of guys stepping up and making plays, and the competition this year in practice has been incredible. I mean, we feel right now that we are better, you know, at this point than we were in week 4 or week 5 last year as a team.
You look a lot bigger this year, a lot more size up front. The quarterback looks like he's grown six, seven inches, maybe 50 pounds. I mean, what did you do last year?
Yeah, no, I mean, our off-season program, we're fortunate to have, we have two full-time strength coaches here, right? Duncan Parham, who's been here for 21 years now. You know, he really does a nice job in the weight room. And then we hired Caleb McSurdy last fall. Caleb played linebacker at Montana, played with the Dallas Cowboys, a couple other teams in the NFL. And, you know, so we brought Caleb in this offseason and really worked, our morning workouts every morning, 6 a.m., 6:30 in the morning, working on just change of direction stuff, speed and conditioning, and then in the weight room. And guys are really buying into the weight room. And, you know, we're fortunate, again, being a boarding school, you have breakfast here, right? So the guys eat in the morning, and then we're making sure they're going over, you know, right away and getting calories, getting the protein back in their body, you know, eating the right things from a nutrition standpoint. And then, you know, I think the biggest thing that we've seen, not only in the weight room, but we have challenged our guys in the springtime to go out and be on the track and field team. And, you know, our track team had great success winning a state championship this year, and the majority of our football team were guys that were out there, right? Either running or throwing or doing different things. So not only were they working in the weight room, but they were also trying to build their athletic skill sets in another way, you know, by playing another sport. And it's one thing that we really like to hang our hat on here as an athletic program is guys playing multiple sports.
What time of day does the football guys start?
So we will start in the off season at 6 a.m., 3 days a week, and then 6:30 the other days. And, you know, we do have some day students, and but we tell them we cater towards the boarders here, you know, to the guys that live on campus. And we do those things, you know, really for the guys that are really serious about football and want to have a good high school football program and develop. And even for those guys that want to go into college, we do that so in the afternoons, right, they can focus on another sport, whether it be baseball, lacrosse, track and field, right? We really push our guys to do other things there. And we found out that it's really helped us from a recruiting standpoint, too. You know, the college coaches like to come in town the night before, and, you know, and some of them being friends of mine, we'll get together the night before, and they'll be here at 6 a.m. to evaluate our guys and then be able to get on, you know, get on the road, you know, and start their day early. So we've seen it really help and really grow our program in that sense from a recruiting placement standpoint. So it's been really good for us and one of the reasons why we do those things.
You talked a minute ago just about, you know, the number of new kids that you have. How difficult is it? You know, you only got them, especially for those kids that are out of state. How difficult is it to squeeze in an install, you know, from August 5th when you guys started to you play in 2.5 weeks against East Burke? How difficult is it to get that organized and to just, you know, get everything worked out? You know, you said Mason's calling two plays or has the ability to call two plays. How difficult is that for you?
You know, I think, you know, myself, a lot of our coaches, we've come from kind of a collegiate background, you know, before as players, coaches. And again, the beauty about boarding school is we have them all day long, right? They wake up at, we have breakfast at 7:30 in the morning right now, and we're together till 9 o'clock at night, you know, most nights. So not only is it about installing offense and defense through meetings and walkthrough, right? Everybody's a different type of learner. You know, some are auditory, some have to go through it, some have to see it visually on the board or on film. So we have time to be able to teach all those things and then get the repetitions over and over again in practice. And we've really changed kind of our focus on how we practice this year. It was one of the big off-season studies that we've done as a coaching staff, is how to practice, right? And how to make sure that, you know, not only we're getting guys to the game, but we're getting them the repetitions that they need, but also the backups getting the repetitions they need, and the younger guys too, keeping them engaged. So it is difficult, you know, but we spend a lot of time too also building the team, right? Because you talk about a lot of new faces and coming into our culture is a little bit different, right? It's not for everybody. And we tell families that up front when they're looking to come here is there's a certain standard that we hold you to, right? And it's not just on the field, it's off the field. It's the way we take care of our facilities, whether it's the cafeteria, whether it's the locker room, whether it's our dorms, whether it's the student center, the theater, you know, where we watch film, all those different things. There's a certain standard that we focus on in our program, and we have great senior leaders this year. And we have a lot of underclassmen now that really are bought into that, so it's really moving in the right direction, right? It has felt like in my first, you know, 3 years here, we were building good football teams, right? Or trying to build good football teams. But now we're at the part where, you know, I think it was one of the reasons, you know, when I got hired in the interview process, I said, I don't want a good football team. We want a good football program. And we feel like now we're at the point where we're building a good football program and hopefully can sustain that moving forward.
Because when you build that good program, you know, good teams happen just naturally.
Absolutely. You're
exactly right.
So, Coach, last year I went to – I don't know if I made any road games, but I came down to Lower Arden on Friday afternoons and whatnot. From just a spectator, I would have said, you know, strength of the team was you had a really strong defense. You had a lot of players go play at the next level. Give us a little insight on what do you think the strength could be of the team this year. Is it going to be defense again? Could it be Mason? Could it be Mason spinning it a little bit? Could it be that offensive line leaning on them, running the ball? You know, what do you think you're going to be able to not have to worry about as much that you feel very, very strong in those capabilities?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, we are returning our starting five offensive linemen, right? And a lot of guys have played both ways. And it really starts up front in the trenches, right? And we've preached that since day one that we are going to win football games this year on the trenches. We're going to lean heavily on our offensive line, our defensive linemen. We've got good linebackers that are back. And, you know, a lot of the skill guys are new, right? So it's kind of, you know, seeing how they develop and how they work into it. But we, you know, we did an overhaul of our offense this offseason. And I think people are going to be shocked when they see us line up under center and do different things, you know, that I think kind of have gone by the wayside. But, you know, we do use a fullback now in our offense, you know, and we have different things that we're doing that we're excited about, but it's really the focus is, you know, our guys up front we feel is the strength of our team this year.
Yeah, and I know whenever I saw Mason get under center, I was definitely shocked. I was like, oh, we do that in Western North Carolina? Like,
yeah, it's one thing that I think, you know, especially with the again, if you have the capability to run the ball, right, you know, and defenses start low in the boxes, we feel confident that we got some really good skill guys on the outside that the play action pass and things like that can open up the pass game for Mason and make those easier progressions and easier reads for him.
You know, just kind of staying on offense, you call plays, don't you, on Friday nights?
So I am taking over the play calling duties again, kind of this year. You know, last 2 years I've kind of split it with, you know, other coaches, and this year, you know, with kind of going back to the offensive, you know, philosophy that I had when I was coaching in college as a coordinator, and we're kind of going back to that, you know, back to square one there. I'll be calling the offense this year.
How difficult do you think it is? Well, obviously, you know, you definitely, you know, have experience doing that. How difficult do you think it is for you to, you know, kind of be in tune with the team as a whole when you're, you know, play calling is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of pressure. I mean, I've done it myself. It's a lot of pressure. But how difficult is it for you to, you know, manage the game? Obviously, I think for me, it would be smoother for me, you know, because you know what you're going to call. Clock management, I think, would be huge for you to be calling the plays and running the clock management. But just what challenges do you foresee, you know, being a play calling head coach?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely challenges. You know, the one area that we're fortunate in is there's absolute trust in our defensive staff and what they do. And, you know, George Johnson, who's our defensive coordinator, and George has been with me in some other stops. And, you know, having the faith in him that we know that the defense is in good hands, and it's awesome having a guy like that around, because we can, you know, talk football all the time, and I'll give him some defensive ideas, and, you know, we'll bounce ideas off of each other back and forth. But I think, you know, when you get in game, you know, there's a lot of trust in that. But I think, as you know, sometimes an offensive head coach, like you hit the nail on the head when you talk about time management and things like that. You're kind of, that is an offensive thing, right? You know, when to use those timeouts, when to burn those timeouts, and ideally if we never have to use them on defense. I always tell Coach Johnson when we go into a game, hey, you know, you got one timeout, you know, offense gets two timeouts, you know, just, you know, let's make sure that we're, you know, now if there's a situation where we need to burn one because, you know, that a funky formation that we're not prepped for, or, you know, occasionally you have a guy that's falling asleep on the sideline, doesn't run out there, and you're short a guy, and you know, so you got to really think about the game and process the game as it's going on. But we also have some really good offensive coaches too, and we've moved Randy Lytle back over to the offensive side of the ball this year, so where, you know, when we do go on defense, there's not a lot of adjustments that I have to make. Put a lot of faith in those guys that, you know, we sit here in the office and talk through different adjustments and things there, where, you know, I can talk to them about the adjustments as we're going. And then, you know, as defense gets on, I can be dialed into the defense and what they're doing, and try to have, you know, have a good, you know, good vision of what, you know, what's going on all game long. And, we'll have some help too. You know, Coach Shoup is over in Germany right now, and when he comes back, he's a huge addition for us, you know, especially on the offensive side of the ball, having been a coordinator in the NFL and different things. You know, so I feel like we have some really good coaches that know football and can make those adjustments on the sideline. So it really helps my job as the head coach and allows me to be the head coach. You know, but again, with George Johnson as our defensive coordinator and moving Pat Danstil to our special teams coordinator, I mean, it's, you know, you have two just incredibly sharp football coaches that could also run this program. So you're not worried at all, you know, as the head coach when, you know, you're an offensive play caller, but you got that guy on defense and that guy running the special teams.
Any coaching changes this year that you've had?
No. I mean, our whole staff is back, and whole staff is back together. The only thing that we've done is, like I said, we moved Randy Lytle over to offense to coach our running backs. We felt like that was a need, that we had to have a guy in the position there. You know, Randy, the last 2 years, you know, has worked in our secondary with Coach Alex Gray, but Alex has taken over the secondary this year. Unfortunately, today he got caught up in a meeting in Charlotte and couldn't make it back in time for the scrimmage. you know, staff as a whole, you know, our whole staff is back and the consistency is there, which is really nice. And we've added a couple of new guys. You know, Jeff Hicks has come on as a volunteer assistant, and Xavier Jordan. You know, again, two guys that have, you know, college experience and high school experience and things like that. So it brings just a new dynamic of some volunteer coaches that we have in our program and community coaches that we have in our program that just bring another, you know, again, bring another voice into a meeting and bring some other ideas around, and all very good at their own thing.
So one thing that did change this year, the schedule.
Yeah.
Last year, it seemed like you played every D2 school around. What led to the change this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. Like, you know, last year we finished with the number one strength of schedule in the state. Mm-hmm. And you know, it wasn't that those teams didn't want to play, right? It's just, you know, you got to kind of pick and choose. When you have, you know, a matter day or, you know, out in California, offer you $25,000 to come out, but it costs $40,000 to go out there, you're going to say no. you know, and you know, and we're not at that level yet, and we know that. You know, we still have a lot of growth to play that national level, but, you know, we were fortunate to find some pretty good, you know, pretty good opponents. You know, Hebron Christian Academy out of Atlanta, and signed a 2-year deal with them. You know, originally we were supposed to play Harding University High School this first game, who kind of backed out, and we picked up East Burke because they had a game drop, and you know, so that's kind of just all of a sudden happened this week. So kind of changing our focus to, you know, they're the gun wing tee, you know, option team, you know, and we were getting ready for a spread, you know, kind of a spread team. So we've got to refocus tomorrow morning as we start game prep for next week. And then AC Flora out of Columbia, South Carolina. I mean, they've had some good programs in the past and have been really good. And you know, so there was a connection there that we were able to get that game this year. And then, you know, really we're into our conference play and division play. And you know, again, we still have the Providence Day and the Raven Gaps of the world that are top 50 programs in the country. You know, Asheville School, which Sean Bryson has been doing a phenomenal job there, making that program better and better. And it's awesome for our rivalry, you know, as they continue to grow and get stronger. And then, you know, Cannon and Metrolina and you know, they're in our conference. So, you know, kind of forced to play us, if you will. And, you know, good programs out of Charlotte, but then also Charlotte Christian being a, you know, a Division I opponent, but, you know, also just kind of out of conference this year for us because of the conference realignment and stuff. But so a lot of familiar faces, but, you know, we're not having the 8-hour travel to South Georgia this year. We're not, you know, bringing teams from Florida or New Jersey to play us. You know, does that mean we won't pick up those games in the future? Absolutely not, right? You know, I think it'd be ideal if we could find more local games and things like that to play close, but we also know that we have to travel to find games or bring opponents in, and that's okay too. You know, we just want to make sure we give our guys every opportunity that they can to play football.
So you mentioned Raven Gap, Providence Day. Christ School, since you've been here, probably top 4 in the state every year. How do you get to that next level where you compete with the Providence Days and the Raven Gaps?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a team, we just have to realize it's about the guys in the room, right? And I've always felt, you know, guys kind of put other teams on a pedestal and they start worrying about the other teams and the faces of the other opponents, right, rather than the faces that are in the room and themselves and taking care of what we can control. And I think our growth as a program is getting there, right? When we focus on ourselves and getting better every single day, right? We challenge our guys to be 1% better every single day, right? Be better than you were yesterday, you know, be better tomorrow than you were today. Find out what it is that you need to work on and grow on. And our guys are really starting to buy into that and focus on that. And I think that's kind of that first step, right? You know, I quoted to these guys, you know, the book of The Art of War, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. And for us to be able to take that journey that we want to go on, we've got to take that first step. And that first step is really focusing on the guys in the room and the team and making sure that we're doing the things that we can control, shutting out all the outside noise and just playing it one week at a time.
So Providence Day picks up a big-time recruit from Reidsville High School. Rumors are big-time NIL money going to him. I'm sure you've probably heard these as well. How does NIL fit into the private school football now?
Yeah, I mean, good for him, right? And that's what I'm going to say. I mean, I wish that the public school, the state association would approve it, right? I mean, again, we've got to look at it. We're in a new century, right? And there's these things are occurring, and it's happening in other states. And we can get upset with NIL. We can look at it, you know, from that standpoint. But if a young man can make money on name, image, and likeness, he should be able to, right? And it's, and again, the NCISA has a lot of rules around it. It's not like you can pay players to come play for you, right? If you get found out that you have, you know, a collective or anything like that, or there's people paying for kids to be here, your athletic programs will be shut down.
Really?
Right? Oh, yeah. There's a lot of rules, and there's a lot of writing behind it. The NCISA has a pretty standard application. If you are trying to get NIL, you're approached by anybody, you know, you do have to fill out an application. It needs to be approved by the NCISA office before, you know, the players can take that deal. And there's so many rules behind it on social media, right? If one of our players gets an NIL deal, which it looks like it's going to happen, right? He can't post anything online with him wearing Christ School attire, you know, being backed by whatever company it is. That company can also not post anything with him wearing, you know, our logo or anything. So there's a lot of like fine details and rules and regulations behind it. But I think it's great, right, for these athletes, and especially it, and it's really only going to affect high level athletes, right?
It's small percentage.
It's such a small percentage, and I think the thing behind it that we forget all the time is especially these high level athletes, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, baseball, whatever sport that it's in, you know, they focus and they spend so much time, right, in the weight room, on the court, on the fields, you know, doing the right things, trying to do these things. They don't have time to work a job, right? So if it's okay for a 16-year-old to go out and be able to work a job that isn't playing a sport, it should be okay for a student athlete who busts their tail, right, in their craft to be able to make money if somebody's willing to pay them, you know, a company's willing to pay them to, you know, use their name, image, and likeness. I think it's a great thing. And I think being afraid of it as coaches is the wrong thing to do, right? You know, because some of these young men are getting life-changing money for their families, right? And I think it's, you know, it's something that, you know, as an adult, you can't sit there and say, no, you shouldn't do this, right? It's going to ruin the game. And yes, maybe it has at some level and some point, and the way the colleges have been doing it, it has tainted the game a little bit. But I think in the high school world, the rules and regulations around it, state to state, and it's all different, is really trying to protect the integrity of the game, but also allowing these student athletes who spend their time focusing on their craft to earn that money, that income.
I'm all for the NIL. I think it should happen a long time ago. But is there one rule in there where they have to publish the agreements?
That's a great question. That I don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know, and I don't know. Again, I don't believe so. But again, all that stuff goes through the NCISA office, right? You know, as coaches, we are not allowed to help players, you know, in the NIL process, right? We can't go out and find them an NIL deal.
So a player that's here, that's on campus, you're mainly his mentor, because last year you talked about how they come and talk to you on a weekly or whatever. And so who does he go to for guidance on that?
Yeah, I mean, they can ask for guidance, right? We can't set it up, but if they are approached by somebody, right, you know, what I do is I pass it along. I have them meet with our athletic director, or their parents meet with our athletic director, fill out the necessary paperwork, right, and go that route. And I tell them, look, any of the things that you decide to do, that's between you and your family. You guys have that discussion. Just make sure anything you decide to do, you first call the NCISA, right? You call Omar down there, and it gets approved, and it's being done the right way to protect your eligibility. And you know, but as coaches, we can't pick up.
So you can't pick up the phone, call Ingles, and say, "Hey,
nope,
okay,
nope, absolutely not."
So you say to protect your eligibility. Is that eligibility for high school, or does it affect college eligibility?
High school.
Okay.
Yep. So like I was saying, like if we'll use Rocky's Hot Chicken. It's right down the road here. If Rocky's Hot Chicken comes in and says, "Lewis, you know, we'd like to give you an NIL deal, and you know, you're wearing a jersey of the team you play for, and they take a picture of you and they posted on their website, and it says, you know, we'll use Christ School as an example. It says Christ School across, you know, there when you're posted online, you just lost a year of eligibility.
Oh, wow.
You know, so, I mean, it's a pretty extensive thing.
So tell me about, I know you have a lot of guys from different areas. How many states, countries, what do you have represented on your team this year?
I believe it's 9 states, 3 different countries. So, and that's not counting the United States. I guess that would be 4 countries if we count, if we count the U.S. So, you know, and we actually have a young man who hasn't joined the program yet, but I saw he did sign up for football, part of our assist program. So every year the kids get, you know, 1 year over here, it's part of the assist program. They come from Germany. So I know we will have a German kid joining our team. I have no idea who he is, what he looks like, anything like that.
I hope he's big. I hope he's big and strong. I hope he's big and strong.
As do I. I mean, that's what Raven Gap, you know. Raven
Gap, absolutely.
The big, you know, and look, I mean, overseas, there's good football. American football is growing overseas. But, yeah, we have kids from, you know, we've got kids from China, Mexico, Canada, you know, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Dallas, Texas. We got kids from Virginia, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Kansas. You know, I mean, just all over. You know, and it's pretty cool because what happens, right? It's almost like college, but these kids are making these great relationships, and you know, they get a break and they're going to their buddy's house who lives on the beach in, you know, South Carolina or whatever it is. And it's a really cool concept for guys and just a really unique atmosphere and a place to coach.
Do you know the number of Buncombe County kids you have?
Lewis.
Off the top of my head, no. You know, I mean, obviously every year we get new kids from Buncombe County, but I think there's really a huge misconception here too that like we get a ton of kids locally. It is really hard for us to get day students here. Mm-hmm. It is really hard for us to get kids locally. It's very competitive, especially in the day student side of things. So unless they're going to be all in and become boarders, right, live here on campus, you know, it's really tough for those guys. And you know, I've said this before, you know, when it comes to football, right, there are some guys that will come through here that I may not meet, that are local kids that play football, and then all of a sudden they're on our, you know, they're on our roster, or they're, you know, they're enrolled into our school, and then we find out they play football, and it's kind of now, okay, well, now we can reach out and see, you know, what's going on there. And I think the other thing is too, you know, in years past, kids will apply as 8th graders or 9th graders and get denied because, you know, 8th grade and 9th grade fills up so quickly here, so then they reapply as sophomores or juniors, and then they get accepted, and then that's when they make the decision to come here. And, you know, it's a very interesting dynamic. But, you know, I think as a coach, you know, like I said, when you have kids from 9 different states, 4 different countries, there's good football all over the place. And when a kid calls from, you know, and a family visits from Texas or from Florida or from California or whatever it may be, you know, it's an opportunity to really diversify our roster, right? And I think that's what our school is about, is a boarding school. But we welcome everybody. I mean, it's awesome when we do have local guys because our boarders have some place to go, and they have a family close by that's willing to take them in and to look after them.
Why is the approval process different for a day student versus a boarder?
So our board, right, we are a boarding school. We're not an international boarding school. And to really, you know, kind of keep that philosophy as a boarding school, we have to meet a certain percentage of boarders compared to
okay.
day students, right? And there's no moving off of that, right? So I think that's where people think, oh, well, they can get anybody in they want. No, we can't. I wish we could.
You know? How many students do you guys have?
300.
Well,
we're going to start this year with 308. So the highest ever in our school.
Because I think that is also a misconception that it's just like you guys have an open door policy and are knocking on everybody's door trying to get kids. And it's like it's extremely, extremely difficult not only to get over here financially, but also the academics and just seeing from based off of some of Luke's things with his teachers. And there are so many college professors that are here teaching high school that are qualified to teach at the highest level. It's not, you've said this twice this interview, but it's not for everybody. Right. And it's also very difficult for kids to get over here and realize that they are starting their, almost in a way, their college a little early, because in a way this is a college program. This is, the school is run very similar to how high level colleges are also run, which probably is why you guys have had so much success of getting student athletes and students to some of the best academic schools in the country.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, when kids leave here, right, they are prepared for that next step, right? And not just if they're in one of our athletic programs, but as a student, right? And what it's like to live on your own, they've done that. Right, they've done their own laundry. They don't have to learn it when they go off to be a freshman in college. They've, you know, they've put in the work. I mean, the workload here for our students is unbelievable. I wouldn't have had success at a place like this as a student when I was in high school. I mean, maybe if I was here and went through that, but just seeing the workload that some of these kids get, I mean, it's unbelievable what they can do academically and the growth that they have. And you know, they're just really prepped when they go off to college to be successful. And we've had a lot of awesome stories over the years, not just, you know, in our athletic programs, but just our students that have come here and the opportunities that they have gotten from leaving this place.
I believe I overheard from another faculty member that we were talking to in the stands that the dorms are full at this point. Is that correct?
Correct.
Is there any plans or anything going on? We're going to expand the dorms, bust out a wall?
No, I mean, no. Right now, you know, the number's really 300, and we're you know, I said 308, that number gets kind of miscued because there's about 11 kids this year that are faculty kids.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, faculty or staff kids that they can go to school here and different things. So that kind of throws off that number, but we look at 300 kids. It's typically 200 boarders, 100 day students. So it's a one-third kind of split, not quite, but, you know, it's we're, I guess, not quite 100-day students, but, you know, there's no plans for the growth okay. right now in that sense.
So once the season's over, Coach, what's the first thing you do? What's the first – football's over, everything's put away. What do you do?
Does football ever end?
No.
You know, so when the season wraps up, you know, you kind of try to catch your breath, but – you know, for me, it's really okay. Now I've got to put on my other hat and try to place our young men, right? You know, those seniors that want to go off to college, if they want to play college football and they haven't been offered an opportunity yet, how do we get them those opportunities? How do we, you know, help them find the right fit, the right school, right? You know, we've had several kids, you know, over the years, not only find a school, but find the right school. You know, so I focus on that really until kind of Christmas hits. I continue to focus on that if we're still trying to help young men out. Then you got to kind of turn your hat to the underclassmen as some of the bigger schools start coming in to see those underclassmen. But it really turns into that recruiting and that placement piece, picking up the phone, calling people. And then I would say in February, you can kind of take a breath, right? And, you know, kind of rejuvenate your battery a little bit. But then you kind of start getting prepped, and it's, now you look at kind of your board, you know, your depth chart, and you start deleting those senior names and kind of getting the idea of, okay, what's next? What's next season look like? What's our off season going to look like? What's our summer programming going to look like? What are those different things? And then, you know, spring ball kind of hits, you know, our winter workouts, those are all in there, and our spring ball kind of hits, and we, you know, again, very unique situation. We'll do 12 to 15 spring practices. We do zero scheme in the springtime, and I think that blows people's mind, right? But we focus on fundamentals and techniques. And part of that, I call it the Dawson Thompson theory. So Dawson Thompson, when he got here, he's from the Bahamas. So five countries, actually. You know, five countries. And so Dawson Thompson's from the Bahamas. When Dawson got here, he was 5'8", 165 pounds. Right, he is 6'5 1/4, 260+ pounds, with an 83-inch wingspan. You know, with offers in the Ivy League, Florida State's offered him a preferred walk-on. You know, and they really like him. But it's about trying to develop these young men fundamentally and technically in the football game, because you never know, right, what an eighth grader or what a freshman could possibly grow into, right? And we call it the, again, in our staff room, we call it the Dawson Thompson coaching theory, right? You got to coach everybody up. We want them to have the best, you know, the best experience and grow them fundamentally and technically, so when they do get older, that, you know, hopefully we find the right, you know, the right fit for them. So that's kind of our spring ball focus. And then, you know, again, it goes to the recruiting and helping our guys, setting up college visits, taking kids to colleges to visit different colleges. You know, then we hit the summertime and I may get away for a week or so, but it's tough, right? And but it's a unique situation because all of our kids go home, right? And except for the local guys that can come here and work out. You know, but we really try to focus and try to do different things as a team in that summertime. But it's really just a continuous, you know, continuous cycle of, you know, we're either trying to place kids in college or help them, you know, in that recruiting process, or we're getting ready for a football season and playing football. So the work really never ends.
Lewis, you got anything else?
I mean, just one more thing. I love to ask coaches this. Looking at your schedule this year, where are you going to finish at? What's the record going to be?
You know, I was told a long time ago, right, to kind of keep those thoughts to myself, right? Walk in silence and take it week by week.
Sure.
And I feel like we have the making of a really good football team. We know we have some really good football teams that we're going to face. And God willing, we get an opportunity in the playoffs. We know we have some really good football teams to beat to our ultimate goal, but we feel like we do. We are closer to a championship team than what we've ever been, and that's our goal.
You a big college football guy?
Love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got a question for you. I'm going to place a future on somebody.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say, give me a sleeper pick for a team to make the playoff.
Well, I've got a sleeper pick to have an opportunity to make the national championship.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm going for.
This isn't going to be a...
If you say the team that I think that I'm thinking of, I'll fall off the couch, but go.
Ole Miss?
Okay. Ole Miss, I definitely think Ole Miss. Ole Miss, I think, could be an SEC championship game. Yeah. I think they've got everything rolling. I don't think losing the back is as bad as everybody's made it out to be.
Right.
I think Texas is going to show that running back could be the most replaceable position on the offense, especially if you're good up front. I'd like you to do some homework tonight and look up, or whenever, does not have to be tonight, Rutgers' schedule.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. They miss all the top four teams in the Big Ten, and it's like the easiest path to 10 wins I've ever seen.
You're going to make our defensive coordinator really happy.
Is he a Rutgers guy?
He's a Rutgers guy.
Okay.
He played for Shiano at Rutgers the first time around.
Their toughest games, Nebraska and Wisconsin. So it's like I was told that by somebody, and I hit them with the biggest laugh out loud. I was like, there's no way you just told me to place one on Rutgers to make the playoffs. And I looked at it, and it's like, I don't know what game they could lose. It's Nebraska and Wisconsin for sure. But the Big Ten, if you take out the top four teams, it's like, okay, I could see that they could get all the rest of them. But I'm super excited. College football is right here. High school football is upon us. Did private school start this Friday?
They actually start. Some of them start this week.
This week. So we're super excited to be following.
Yeah. Derek?
No, I'm good. I mean, it's one thing that really shocked me was, you know, that you said that you do zero install in spring. I would think that springtime would be a super heavy time for you because it's one of the few times that you got your guys all together, you know, before they break for the summer and go to those, you know, 5-6 different countries that they've got going. But I love it. Football 101. I mean, that's huge. You're teaching guys, you know, how to play the game. And when you got guys coming from five countries, you know, probably a majority of them, they don't know what a three technique is, or they don't know how to reach block or whatever is going on. That's super interesting.
Yeah. Is part of it because you have so many new faces after the spring?
No, not really.
How many new kids do you have? Any idea? A lot?
26.
Wow.
Out of how many? You said 70.
72.
72. I should remember that.
First thing I noticed was the numbers. The numbers just look outstanding.
Because last year was like 45-ish.
We dressed 38 in our playoff game.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Y'all are big.
We are. Ooh. It's exciting.
Does Mason look you eye to eye?
Yeah, he's still a little bit shorter.
Okay, than me, but it's close. He's a big dude. Okay, he was wearing cleats, but I was like, he's gotten physical. And then Derek goes, "Man, he's easy to look at." It's like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and he's a great kid too. I mean, good kid, good family.
Definitely the first time in probably Western North Carolina history we've had two top tier quarterbacks playing high school football with Eli and Reynolds.
Yep.
So, are you playing college football 2025?
You know, I did play it.
Yes.
You know,
I did
play it.
Did you load it up with Christ school kids? Or?
And, well, you know, it's funny. So the first game I played, you know, I played as NC State.
Sure.
And, of course, I had to put Zach in at safety. Aiden was already starting. So, you know, I may have played on the easiest level because, you know, it's been a while since that game's been around. And, but I had a pick six with both of our guys.
Nice.
It was pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
It was pretty cool. But then, you know, I played with all of our guys, you know, Caden Jones with Alabama and putting Khalil Conley in at UNC. And, you know, I even played with Charlie Browder and Navy Schuler at Tennessee and, you know, Josh Harrison at Wake Forest. I mean, it's just awesome. You know, I think that game coming back and what they've done, you know, with those kids is just super exciting. And what's awesome is, you know, we have it here in the student center in the video game room, and watching our kids, you know, play those games, pick those teams, and the first thing they do is go to the substitutions and put those guys in. You know, it's pretty cool.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate you taking time to talk to us. I know you're super busy.
No, I appreciate you guys making the time.
Yeah, no, thanks again, guys. We'll be back on the air next week. We have our week one picks. We look forward to talking to you then. Thank you.